We have Lucia, Alicia, Karina, and Valeria, who are going to talk a little bit about what's happening in Latin America in terms of gender and the financial crisis. We didn't talk about how we would lead off, so. Okay, you will be first. So we have an hour for this, and I will cue you again from the back of the room.
Okay, I'm going to do it as fast as possible. Well, first of all, I want to say to read this because I have some quotations that I think that they are very important, especially for the people that are not economists. So you will have some concepts to understand what about this crisis. Well, okay, currency is a science of economy. But the squaring of the circle is to geometry of perpetual motion to mechanism. And this is said in an article of William Stanley Jevons, Money and the Mechanics of Exchange of 1875. Then one of the things that I want that it is very important here is to understand the hypothesis of the internationalization of financial circuits since the Latin America get engaged in the international market. And it is not only markets, it's also financial circuits, and that means that most of these countries also has an hegemonic money to make the transactions in the international markets. So there are two points, there are two visions to see the monetary theory, and one because the other said, Niloufer, and also it's going to be very fast. More slow, but I have 15 minutes. 1 5 minutes. Maybe in the debate, if they want to. Yes, because I think this is very important. Yes, we are in the same channel. Okay, so I want to say what is the concept of not neutrality of money? Well, this is written in the articles of What is Money of Alfred Mitchell Innes and in the Credit Theory of Money, and it is in a journal that is Banking Law Journal of 1913 and 1914. And then Knapp, who was like an advisor of Keynes, wrote the state theory of money. And then Keynes explained all of that in his book, an excellent book, that is The Treatise of Money of 1930. And that concept of charter limits is very important because money means chart, and in chart in Latin means letter. So that's where the notion that of the money is the money that it is made by the state, specific the central bank. So this is the concept that we are using, and especially here in the Levy Economic Institute, most of the research is in this side of the economic theory. Then what is neutrality of money? Well, that neutrality of money is the concept that all our governments use to manage the monetary policy. So this is written, and it is taken by Milton Friedman. One of the concepts is, it is in Carl Menger, On the Origin of Money. This is a beautiful paper that you can find in internet, and it is and it was written in 1892. And later on, Milton Friedman, in the Quantity Theory of Money, a restatement in 1956, he said that money falls from the helicopter. And what does that mean? Well, that is the meaning why the central bank has to be, must not put more money in the market because it will affect the inflation. Well, I am just reducing, and I am trying, as I said, to do it like in a kinder language, so people that are not, they are not economists can understand. And I know Heather knows of this very well because she is a student of Randall Ray, so maybe in that debate she can answer with more intelligence the questions. But this is the two visions of monetary, neutrality of money and the non-neutrality of money. Then, what do we have here? That, and this was explained by Jan the first day, is that when after the Second World War, there was the Bretton Woods system, who is they established a regulatory monetary system, and this is especially this and one of the first articles of the central bank in most of all the countries is the word development. After the 1972, when it was broken, for me it is August of 1972, it is the date where we can say it is broken, the Bretton Woods systems, when came a period of devaluations, a lot of monies were devaluated, and especially the dollar was devaluated in front of the dollar, and it comes the post-Bretton Woods. And post-Bretton Woods, the pillars of the post-Bretton Woods system that comes until now, I think post-Bretton Woods finished the 15th of September of 2008 with the Lehman Brothers bankrupt. Well, it is the period of the deregulation and liberalization financial process. And this comes from all the countries all over the world. Eva has already explained all the deregulation and liberalization financial process that they have in the in the Central East and in Europe and especially in those countries. So even there are, I was just seeing right now, and in Le Monde Diplomatique, there is an article about it's written in French, about why France was in that deregulation of financial process. But this is for all the countries. So I'm going to read this because this is very important, and this is the most important hypothesis to understand not only this crisis, but 1982 crisis in USA and the Mexican crisis in 1976, and there are more than 150 bank crisis between the end of the 70s and until now in different countries. And not only the countries have had 1, 2, 3, and almost 4 or 5 crises. So I am going to read it very slowly, and it says, Hyman Minsky wrote in 1982 a book, and it is Can It Happen Again? So he is one of the most visionist man that now the Wall Street has mentioned him since 2007. Everybody now is Minsky, a person that must have won the Nobel Prize. He said, can it, a Great Depression, happen again? Instability is an observed characteristic of our economy. For a theory to be useful as a guide to policy for the control of instability, the theory must show how instability is generated. The abstract model of the neoclassical synthesis cannot generate instability. Once this is done, the instability can be shown to be a normal result of the economic process. Once instability is understood as a theoretical possibility, then we are in a position to design appropriate interventions to constrain it. Well, what happened? Let's go to this is I love this comic because this is from the Economist. What happened with this instability? But precisely during the deregulation and liberalization process, there were the alphabet soup, we say in Spanish, sopa de letras, that it means more in Spanish than in English, because I don't know if you have in the USA alphabetic soup for the children, but maybe if you were a children, one day you take that soup. And they made a lot of financial instrument that breaks the financial system. And if you see, if that is the financial system there is a man bumping, no, everything. And this is the most important thing that they had been doing during September 2008. The group of 20, if you see, they are trying to put money to, no, to take out and to liquid all the those special instruments. And why do I put here that 2008 and 2009 is the commodities price crisis, and this is where I want you to put Latin America. So from the deregulation, and I'm going to repeat every again, that deregulation and amortization process, we have new elements in the financial process that they are called financialization and securitization. There is definitions about finalization from Epstein, from Chesney, from the Marxist view, from the post-Keynesian, forever. We are not going to see it here. But it's also the securitization that it is translated in Spanish by the IMF as titulización, o sea, financiarización and titulización process. So here we are going to have the alphabet soups. And this is, I take it from Rubini article, where he showed the structural finance glossary like an alphabet soup. And then, these are the new derivatives, but Jan has already explained the first day, the CDS, but you have plenty of these new derivatives, the synthetic derivatives, that they were by Fitch, by Moody's, they were like not with one, two, and three crosses, because they were highly, highly well, they were winners of the financial system. And then you have the other traditional derivatives, where it is very important how Latin America engaged in this crisis. This is, I have just asked them, because this is very important, how the structural financial keeps these banks, because everybody, all the economic agents went into this market. And you can see, for example, the second column is the relation between the derivatives and the assets that has each bank. And they have, there's a percentage in the last column. And for example, JP Morgan has 2.08. And for example, Citibank is 3.86. So can you imagine all the mess these banks made in the derivatives, with the derivatives contract? And that's why is the problem. There is a problem of capitalization in the banks, but there is also a problem on how Latin America engaged in this crisis. So, since our point of view, the crisis in Latin America comes before, because the instability of these countries are expressed in the devaluation of the 70s, in the external crisis during the 80s, the banking crisis. For example, Chile has two banking crises. Mexico also two banking crises, plus the banking crisis. And well, the most recent crisis, that it was the Argentina crisis. I think I'm just going. So only the thing that I want to say is that the Latin America financial crisis is going to be very deep, and there are going to be a lot of contradictions, but because the especially the how the model of these countries has been, especially the exportations. And the exportations are the commodities that are defined in the derivatives market. So one of the principal reasons of the Latin America crisis is this the game that they do it in the commodities, because it was not only the demand of China because they told us that it was a demand of the Chinese people that they were eating more, et cetera, et cetera. But they, because it was a lot of speculation in the structural financial market and especially in the derivatives. And this I take because it was terrible, terrible, because all the government said that, what crisis? We don't have any crisis. We are emerging countries. Which crisis? They don't have no idea of what was happening in the world. And here it's only a comic, and I think I will finish. Let me see. Yes. No more comics. Well, I have more, and then I say here is all the model of the Latin America as exporter of primary goods. And the other thing that's very important, and then maybe in the debate we can have it here, is the loss of sovereignty of the central bank, the penetration of the banking system, the lack of public and development banks, not in all the countries. For example, Brazil is 80% of their banks are of the state and are development banks. And the competitiveness, the lack of a monetary policy there. And then I think then I have all the charts of how the forecasting of Latin American countries. But I think we can leave, I will finish here so my colleagues can talk about the Mexico and Argentina. Okay.
Yeah. Now move your chips, and we are going to very concrete case of fiscal policy, and we are going to see how this crisis goes. If we are going to monitor gender needs, you know, it's something completely different. Alicia gave us a context. We see the economic crisis, the Mexican situation, and fiscal policy to counter the crisis in Mexico, the example of the health crisis in Mexico, and fiscal policy monitoring. Well, even if that is... It is very important to know that every single crisis, even if it's financial or it's health crisis, everything goes into economy. And that's the economic part that we are going to look at. In general terms, the effects for each country depends on how the country was standing at the beginning of the crisis. And the second is the time variable in economics, you know. How much the crisis lasts and how soon it takes to implement measures. Those things are very important. Let's see in the Mexican case how Mexico was before the crisis. It's very important to say that we have a very low tax collection, approximately only 9% of GNP, and we are income dependent on petroleum resources, and we have concentration of exports for one country, that's the United States, no, Mexico and the United States. Those are the main factors. There are a lot of more factors, but those are very important to know and to have, because crisis is going to be worse if we have some kind of factors. For example, if we already have a very low tax collection, crisis is going to be lower, so it's important. And the other point is that we have a very inequitable income distribution. So tax policy has not been already reverted, that very inequitable income distribution, not eradicated gender inequality in Mexico. So those are... If we see only as a very, very concrete summary, that where are the sectors that are going to be moved or most highly affected by the crisis, we can see that those are trade, tourism, direct foreign investment, remittances and prices of raw materials. And when we see those, we can say that there is a ladder of 68 or 70, from 68 to 72, depending on the year, more around 70 women work in the tertiary sector. That means on trade and tourism. So those sectors that are going to be slowed down by the crisis is where women laborers outside home are. And direct foreign investment, you know, it's a lot of money needed in Mexico for new investment and remittances and the prices of raw materials, as we saw. Well, I have the package that Mexico stands for to counter the financial crisis. And there are 10 actions. I'm going to read them to you. Looking at some very special points. 3% reduction of provisional payment by business or income tax and corporate flat rate tax. This is this provisional payment that is going for business. That's the important point. Number two, 1,000 pesos as fiscal stimulus for every business, again, business person, and business that makes their annual tax payment online. Simplification of foreign trade by making customs paper more efficient, thereby reducing production costs. The federal government will pay 5% of worker employment contribution to the Mexican Social Security Institute. So it's helping workers and employers in order to keep the works, not to close down. Increase the national employment system training budget by 600 million pesos, establish a free employment web portal, and increase the budget for maintenance of Pemex ducts. Pemex is the oil company, the huge oil Mexican company. So in order to have more infrastructure work going on, we are going to have 10 billion pesos in there. Fiscal stimulus and credit for business, again, that open in municipalities with high and very high levels of marginalization. The government will pay worker employment contribution to the Social Security and the housing, Infonavit is housing, for 1.5 years. And business can deduct this new investment from their PIT, personal income tax, from their enterprise income tax, and economic support for daycares and subsidies for purchasing a house. That's the only remembers that there is something else that besides business. And reduction of electricity costs at peak hours. And the 10th is 3 billion pesos for the Mexican Development Bank to promote economic activity. In addition, resources have been allocated for development infrastructure for 53,100 million pesos. So that's the package, the huge package to counteract the financial crisis in Mexico. It's very important trying not to close down the employment we already have because we have a very high rate of unemployment. So it's very important to keep the economy going. It reduces fiscal income. We know for sure that it's going the crisis to reduce fiscal income because of the deceleration or recession and decreases in the price of basic goods. And we all need a lot of money as well because we need to stimulate the economy in that case. So we are going, that's the main package. Now are going to see a very small example of a crisis within a crisis. You know, this is a health crisis that we just had in Mexico last April, the swine flu health crisis. And we are going to see what happened actually in order to stop the contagious children were sent home. Schools were closed, daycare center were closed. So everybody must go home and stay at home as much as they could. No cinemas, no theaters, not anything. Everything was closed. in order not to have places where a lot of people meet. So we have in them this crisis, as all crises, worsen the unresolved problems. In terms, for example, of unpaid work, children are sent home because daycares and schools are closed, and a request is made for everyone to stay at home. So that increases women's work. You know, it's something that really happens, that in fact happens, but nobody talks directly about what is going on. In terms of paid work, the labor market situation, the government relies on the sensitivity of business to let women miss work. But it was not said if it was going to be paid or not. Just please be sensible to enterprises that women maybe are not going home because they have to take care of children. So the role is very clear. Women are the ones to take care of children, but not if the government could make something that it could make in this case, but they didn't. Next. In terms of services provided by the Ministry of Health, as in all crises, all insufficiencies appear. So we have insufficiencies in care, insufficiencies in differential policies. We haven't a special health, let's say, campaigns for women and men with different motives to come to the health center. And with the administrative registers. It took 8 days since the crisis started when they told us the amount of people who were dead disaggregated by sex. No? After 8 days of the health problem, and the Ministry of Health says, because we do have terrible gender inequalities in Mexico, we have more women dead than men. And women did not came to the health services because they had a lot of work at home taking care of children. And they didn't think it was worth it to go, and they died. Actually, the name of the classification of the women that were housewives, it was terrible. And we said that if we had differences in campaigns saying everybody must come, and if we have those registers before, we could have not have at least 3 women were not dead if they knew they have to go sooner to take care of themselves. We have as well an economic package for this very small crisis in the crisis, but it wasn't small, it was big. The economic package to counter the health crisis has 5 actions. To accredit a corporate flat tax rate with a provisional payment of PIT, or so something that goes with 2 different taxes in direct taxes in Mexico, exempt up to 20% of employer contribution to Mexican Social Security Institute, exempt up to 50% of payment of migratory extraordinary services and port fees, exempt up to 50% of payment for airspace rights, and to provide fiscal subsidy for states that exempt payroll taxes for hotels, restaurants, and recreation. That 3, 4, and 5 are for tourism. No? The economy is going to slow down a lot because of the scare of the people to go to Mexico because of not to be contagious. So those are for them. So this is the response to the crisis that I told you in another different way. You know, women contributed to stop the epidemia, but there is nothing in there to say. Well, the women were affected because it worsens their situation. And what do we have to monitor in then with this small example, and with the 2 packages? We have to monitor to monitor the productive sectors, the most affected by the crisis, you know, like we said, trade and tourism maybe, and the most benefited by the fiscal policy. Who is the fiscal policy? If it's going directly, for example, to cars industry or that industry, not directly to the ones affected maybe. Requested information broken down by sex. That's very important to monitor. Jobs eliminated, jobs generated, job benefited by support. Fiscal stimulus for formal sector of the economy. If we could see all the packages go to the formal sector of the economy. And as I told you from the first talk, Mexico has a long, long informal sector. So the package goes only to the formal sector. Are only business benefited or individuals as well? That's something that we must try to monitor, because most of the package go to enterprises, go to businesses, not especially to individuals. We as consumers, we can have a low, small tax as well. Are policies to reduce taxes equally efficient as those that increase spending? That's a question. Earmark resources for women and gender equity. It's something that it could be done before the crisis, so we can be sure that those resources are not moved. And is fiscal policy doing something to reduce caretaking workload for women? That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. What do you think that is going to happen with the prices of some of the main products that that are the finance of our economics? For example, in Ecuador, the oil. We depend on the oil to all the social politics.
Forecasting for Latin America, especially of the income that they receive for the commodities, I think it is descending around 20 or 30% of the income of the governments. That's amazing, because they won't have enough money to continue to most of the programs that they will have, especially Ecuador and Venezuela with the Misiones and all those programs. Even in the problem of Bolivia. Well, what will happen with the prices? I don't know, because the problem of this crisis, I think, and I want to think that the crisis has already ended. I think that the crisis finished. You can see it's the 15th of September, when the government, because they were, we have Jane Darista last year in Mexico, and we told her, well, what happened for Lehman Brothers, why they didn't rescue? And they said that they were just, they never thought how huge was going to be not to rescue Lehman Brothers. After that, one day later, after Lehman Brothers and all the descent of the market, immediately Paulson announced the program to rescue, to clean the taxes, because one of the problem is the derivatives market, in which all the construction of these economic agents are. So that's the problem. And of course it accepts Latin America, because the commodities, our principal products, are defined in the Chicago Board of Trade. So I think that is one of the most important, that's what the difference to characterize this crisis of the other ones, is the game that Latin America play in the model that we decided to have after we finished the substitution process of industrialization. We went again to the model of exports, but I think Corinne is
Thank you.
Ready.
Yes, Corina is on. And then I think in the next panel we'll have some more discussions about the financial crisis and whether or not these so-called green shoots are really weed. Because the commercial market is just turning down, and the credit cards is turning down. So I'm not sure about recovery, whether it's really green shoots or weeds. But let's go on. Okay.
Okay, I will present briefly the Argentinian case, just some thoughts. As it was already mentioned, in the case of Argentina, we have only started to recover from the 2001-2002 huge economic crisis. And I think we should also take into account in this context what I would call the 90s heritage. All the structural adjustment policies that were implemented and the result that those have in terms, especially on social indicators. Since 2003, we have been recovery. So the context where this crisis happens is a context of economic recovery, which implied also employment recovery, though there was less social recovery. There was increase of wages, especially during the first years of this recovery period, but then we started to have some inflation, so the real wages recuperation was ameliorated. Poverty is still high in Argentina. Unfortunately, we don't have figures on poverty because the government has taken over the Institute of Statistics and started to, we could say, manipulate the indicators. So after 2007, we really don't have good indicators in Argentina. We could estimate that poverty is around 15% to 20%, but really we don't know. And inequality remains unchanged. During this period, there was little improvement in gender equality. So the social, what I wanted to highlight is that despite the economic recovery, the social context where this crisis happens is still a more or less bad one. Also in Argentina, during this period after the crisis, there was a change in government and there was a change in the role of the state in the economy, and there was more public intervention in the economy, not as a result of facing the crisis, but beforehand. And mostly the interventions had to do with subsidies to private sector, mostly to the energy sector and also to transport. There was more support to public investment, although the result of this public investment is not so clear. Again, we are losing data on this. And there was also more intervention of the state in the labor market, especially promoting collective bargaining and somehow supervising the collective bargaining. And this was one of the reasons why salaries recovered during this period. Still, I would say it is good that we are having more public intervention in the economy, but still there was insufficient or incomplete manufacturing development after the crisis. And one thing that I think it's quite important is that the government in this expansion period did not take the decision of proceeding with a tax reform. So there was no taxation reform in Argentina. And there was also the impossibility of creating a counter-cyclical fund, although there were some ideas on that. And also there was no real improvement in social security net, although there were some changes in the pension system that were in the direction of broadening the coverage of the pension system. Still, the benefits are in monetary terms, very low. So which are the channels of transmission of the crisis in the case of Argentina? I could say that we are in a less vulnerable situation than in previous crises, and I would also say that Argentina is in a less vulnerable situation than other countries in Latin America. We have a more solid position in terms of external reserves. There is now in the country more capital flow regulation. And we have already paid all our debt with the IMF. So we have been having this policy of desendeudamiento, I don't know the word in English, of reducing our external debt, mostly with the IMF. Even when we are in a less vulnerable position, still we are vulnerable in these dimensions. We are dependent on exports, so we are vulnerable to international trade flows and also to commodity prices. We are still in need of foreign direct investment, even when Argentina is not so dependent on FDA as other countries in Latin America. And of course, we are still in need of financial resources, both to fund public and private spending. So I think the transmission of a crisis will be very relevant in terms of fiscal constraint, because we are already facing less revenue due to export decline and demand contraction. So what are the evidence of this crisis impact in the Argentinian context? As I already told you, we in fact don't know, because we are lacking fundamental information. The situation of the Institute of Statistics is really very critical. So whatever evidence we have is more provided by private researches or private statistics even, and also by what we read in the media. So this evidence what tells us that, in fact, there are some foreign companies that have already announced that they will leave the country. This might have some impact on employment, but not so important. I think it has more impact on, I don't know if expectations is the good word in English, expectativas. It's more the impact it has on people and on enterprises' expectations that they have in the level of employment. There are already some evidence on decreased demand and also in jobs lost. And there are some indicators of decreased income, which happen to be more important for informal jobs. And of course, here are some gender dimensions that we should consider. And we also are already facing decrease in the fiscal surplus that we had. And inflation is still a problem in Argentina, or have been a problem in Argentina, which again, we don't know how severe it is, because we don't have a good price, index price. So given this evidence, which have been up to now the responses from the government? First of all, the one that Alicia was saying, crisis, which crisis? We are not facing any crisis. So the first reaction of the Argentinian government was, no, the crisis is somewhere else. We are not going to be affected by this. And I think in the case of Argentina, this was also like that, because we are in an election context. We have elections last Sunday. So the government was trying to make everything appear to be okay, and we are managing everything, and nothing is really happened. Still, when time went by, some indicators, some of the evidence appear, then the government said that for them the main goal would be to protect jobs, so the measures that they would take would have this main goal. And clearly there was no gender implications into account in the responses the government were giving. We could summarize the response or the strategy the government developed with these dimensions. The government decided to sustain, and this is not only because of the crisis, it has to do with the macroeconomic of this government, to sustain the competitive exchange rate that would somehow protect the local industry. They decided to apply some subsidies to support credit supply. But still, the availability of credit do not challenge the uncertainty. Again, expectations, I think, has much to do here. The fact that credit is made available to the enterprises does not guarantee that the enterprises will make use of that credit, because what happened is that they fear the future, so they Even when the credit is available, they prefer not to get into any debt. There were some packages on subsidies to support consumption, but this was focused mostly on medium-income households, subsidies to support consumption on cars and household supplies. And they announced a public infrastructure package around 10,000 million US dollars. But again, as I said before, there seems to be a gap between what the government say they will do and what they really do in terms of infrastructure. They also raise some barriers to imports. And there is a tendency to the government to take over private enterprises that declare to be bankrupt. There have been two or three cases up to now. So this is the government response. The question is there space for alternatives of what of this should be improve or foster to have a more active response to the crisis. I think one of the weaknesses of the strategies the government is taking is that it lack of coherence. So I think the government should design a more coherent policy strategy to face the crisis. It should improve the public intervention. And in this case, I think in Argentina, it's very important to improve transparency in terms of what the government is doing with the money, and there should be a system to monitor what the government is doing with the money and what the outcome of this intervention is. And I think there should be a redirecting of social spending, and more money, public money, should go to social infrastructure and to income maintenance policies. And if the government is going to keep on the strategy of subsidizing the private sector, I think this should come with a commitment from the private sector in terms of employment, in terms of jobs creation, in terms of keeping the level of wages. And also I think there is some, there should be some space to ask these enterprises to commit to some gender equity goals in the labor market. And finally, I think it is important to foster social security net, more inclusive and universal benefits. And I think a key word to face the crisis and to end up with a better world than we had before the crisis, the key word should be for me redistribution. I think whichever policies implemented should look for redistribution of work, both paid and unpaid, redistribution of resources, income and assets, and also redistribution of power. I mean more democratization on the decisions about what we are doing with the public money. Thank you.
I didn't plan to bring a PowerPoint for two reasons. One, I devoted most of my time to preparing PowerPoint and yesterday's sessions. But this is, it's working. And also because Corina's presentation is quite covered lots of things, I would like to stress and make some comments because I think most of what Corina has shown has a descriptive touch on it, and I would like to talk a bit more about processes and the macro processes that are behind. Because there is a paradox. Of all that Corina said, the only thing I wouldn't take at face value is the denial, government denial approach. I don't think that was the case. And I think that there are if the same picture could be thought of as a result of processes, I think there are some virtuous processes happening and some very important tensions also. So maybe these outcomes, I would like to spend some time in thinking what's the process is. And basically, the 90s had an over-appreciated exchange rate regime. We had our worst crisis, and we enter a phase of what Frankel calls a competitive exchange rate regime, and that pushed forward a wave of substitution against imports and expansion of industry and a very high process of growth. I mean, a rapid growth. And along with this, a strong position and I think a very, it's not unusual, not seen before, that is the word I'm looking for, in which we kind of reverse long-term trends on dollarization and indebtedness. So we went a bit back in this long-term tendency of replacing our domestic currency increasingly with dollars, and we almost ended up in a dollarization in 2001, and getting rid of indebtedness, both not only by paying IMF, but by renegotiating a debt that reached 150 of relation between debt and GDP. So that I would say that is the interesting side of this story. Also because there was no contracyclical fund, as it was mentioned by Corina, the rate of growth was very high. I mean, kind of we accepted the whole lot of positive shocks that were coming from abroad, and that meant expansion, a huge expansion in the exchange, in the rate of growth, which are the tensions down there. And I think, who mentioned stop-and-go models? I think Neil for today. So we reemerged. We had a new wave of tensions between those export sectors that were benefiting from this expansion of exports, basically the rural sector, the sectors producing commodities, and the tensions to this the industry in the sense that the push for higher real wages, which came quite late, in my opinion, and I've said this before, wages started, nominal wages started going up, 2004, something like that. So the first recovery was really capital surplus, and then wages came later. So one tension was the period while the real wage recovered, and it recovered from the lowest levels since 1940. So the long-term trend in real wages was escalating, although with stop and goes, up to 1976, which is the year our dictatorship started, and going down, ups and down, but down, during the 90s, and then the worst of this, it was the year 2002, 2003. So again, the recovery, that's why we don't see so much in the social indicators, that recovery was not as fast as we wish it had been, and tensions emerged when this really, it's a nice thing to say, conflict emerged, when this push to increase real wages kind of went against capital surplus. So we had distributed tensions there. So I think the sectoral tensions in this industry and primary producers sectors, along with this tension and the not so rapid increase in wages, in fact, were not solved in the right way because since 2007 and at the same time that INDEC was taken over, the exchange rate began appreciating and it was used again and again
as a tool to control inflation. So that if this was a new model, quote unquote, we have had some discussions, long discussions, on whether this was really different or this was just the same in a new disguise, you say? I don't remember the phrasing. The point that it was somewhat abandoned between 2007 and just the crisis, and then I think there is an idea of recovering a competitive exchange rate. So I simply wanted to show kind of the process as this behind, and second round effects. For example, there were talking about expectations. There were lots of talks that the government would not be able to face its to face its payments, its international payments. Why? Because, and this is Martinea has published in ECLAC's last ECLAC's review version, yeah, that we were going to face a 3-point deficit in our current account, and that was kind of the view. That's because it was assumed that imports were going to be roughly the same. The point is that imports adjusted because our GDP went down. So in a way, it is the activity and the imports that adjusted, and then obviously there were policies to put them down in order to counterbalance this effect of less capital inflows or less dollars inflows because of the plummeting of international prices. There was something else I wanted to say. Debt. Oh. No.
She's almost 40, that's why.
And yes. So there was something else I wanted to say, and it's I'm going around here and it's not here. So
well, maybe I just one question and then a very short comment on the, some of the mechanics of the crisis. But the question really was that we had really very interesting presentation of Alicia at the beginning, introducing us to the main, setting the stage. And she was talking a lot in a very interesting way about the role of the financial sector and really how bad they are, derivatives, which is all true, we've known it from previous lectures. Now, in the presentations of on Mexico and Argentina, we didn't really touch upon that almost at all, especially I was taking note on this alternative, what could be done, what is missing at the end, and there was really nothing. Do this thinking aim at redoing, revitalizing, or reorganizing financial sector, the incentives, all these other things within the national level? And, is there anything about that? Because I think it would be very interesting to see if this will be business as usual. So if we come back to the same, and then where is the same, of course. Or could it be done at a national level, or it depends only... Well, it does depend on the international level, but is there any thinking or any discussion in both countries about how this could be done? The comment, very short comment, which I would have because I don't want to take time, I think that when you look at the, especially we have very good understanding what happened in the financial crisis in Russia, which is the consequences of a mid-1990s crisis. It was a very typical way of action of the government and everyone. They were really trying to cover up the growing deficit by increasing the interest rate, bringing the speculative capitals, putting it up at up and up, and it was very clear. I mean, it was sometime in July, or as far as I remember now, the sequence when they were actually asking each time. They were still pushing it more up, but they had a problem, so they were going to IMF, getting a little bit of the short-term support, knowing that it will collapse. And it was very clear that the knowledge was there, both on the IMF side and also at the government side. So what happened is that those who knew about that were buying bonds, but they were cashing them immediately, and then they were making fortunes. And then, okay, the crisis, no possibility, that's the end of it. And then they had to devalue the ruble. And what happened, of course, people who didn't know about that, they have all their savings in the banks. This was really a tragic situation and such a hit into the poorest, but also the bit mid-level people. They lost practically everything during the devaluation. And it was really, I look at this much more in detail, so I had the whole sequence in one of the papers for the Human Development Report on the globalization report. And it was really, then I really discovered that these people knew. It's not like they didn't know. But it was, you know, 1 week, somebody gains, maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So it's, okay, that's what I wanted to comment, because the mechanics is very similar. Now, if you want to prevent this type of crisis, you need to put up some mechanisms into stopping that process. So that's why my question was about the financial sector and the thinking about that.
No, my point was the ending was that there is Argentina that went through a similar pattern. Is nowadays in a paradoxical situation that for once this crisis came through the real side and not on the financial, because we were already out of the financial markets. So in a sense, we had been cut off from financial markets far before. So the pattern that Brazil, for example, follows quite different from what Argentina followed in the last 2 years or 3 years, because we didn't have those credits. So in fact, the paradox is that we had already experienced what it meant, what the crisis meant, and it doesn't happen now because we haven't had these huge cuts, although there is a problem with capital flight. So in fact, we are not recipients of IMF, neither IMF nor Federal Reserve funds, as are Mexico and Brazil. That was one.
I was telling Lucia that during the flu, they were around 10 wonderful days that we were at home working and making papers and many, many things. And I used to see the official channel of TV and CNN, and everything was excellent. But one day I decided to see the newspaper La Jornada, which is the opposite side, is the left journal. And it was terrible that this man, the health minister, saying that everything was well, and all the demands of the people that when they arrive to the hospitals, they don't have the medicine, or they that's why most many die. So the problem of this is, what does this mean? Is that the restriction of the monetary policy during the last 3 decades with all this deregulation process, instead of improving the health system and the education system and the welfare system of a country, has just been abandoned. So that's why this... the importance of this was very, it shows you the lack of a good monetary policy and fiscal policy. And besides that, I only want to say that when the governor of the city, with Marcelo Ebrard, that it is from the left party, because this was also used in a political manner, because we are having votation this weekend. And he closed the restaurants, and he said, well, it doesn't matter. I am going to give 50 pesos to the waiter, the people that works in the restaurant. And 50 pesos, it's more or less $4. But imagine those people that comes, that makes around 2 or 3 hours a day just coming to go to work, because most of the people are outside of, they are in the suburban part of the city, and they take 1 hour, 1.5 hours, and most 2 hours. So in a round trip, they make around 3 hours daily. Can you imagine going for 50 pesos to, that they were going to receive 50 pesos a day? Well, that is really a shame of the left party, and especially also of all the way that the government managed the flu. And besides that, the other thing that I want to say is, why do I think that the crisis is not ending? It is we are having the development of the crisis, because we have only 2 or 3 weeks ago, we have the new regulation of the financial system. And that's going to have a new, the financial system is not going to be like now we are having today. We are going to have a new reshape of the financial system, not a new architecture of the financial institution as the IMF, because if you see the last session of the 20 group, the things that they do is they put again a lot of money to the IMF, but for to clean the toxic instrument. But I think we will continue with this financial institution, but maybe they will not have as a lot of profits as they have during the last years.
Mine is a simple one. It looks a little stupid, but I want just to be educated. You've been talking about it, but then you haven't given the answer. When does a crisis become a crisis? Because it doesn't happen like lightning. It's a real process. But when does it really become a crisis, especially in the developing countries context? All the economic characteristics you've been talking about actually happen in the developing countries' governments, but they are not in a crisis. So when does it really become a crisis, and who declares it's a crisis?
The last announcement of the crisis in Mexico just yesterday is that the GDP is at the level of 1932. So it decreased. It has already decreased 10.2%, worse than the banking crisis during the 1995. So GDP and the exportations, the crisis in the industrial process, and especially, for example, in Mexico, well, it's a tragedy, because most of the manufacturing, and especially the automobile industry, we had a lot of plants that make the cars, not only for the internal market, for the U.S. market, they are closing. And well, but I think Lucia can explain better.
Well, Well, I think it's a very good question. When does a crisis become a crisis? I think in Mexico, we used to say that we have been in a crisis for 25 years. So we are continually in a crisis. If we are talking about poor people and about income distribution and about gender inequalities and all those things that are not unresolved problems during the normal, let's say normal times, when the crisis comes, they worsen their situation. But crisis is a
is a moment where everything goes out of the policies are not enough. Let's say we have to make extra or new policies to try to redirect the economy because it is going out. Like in this case, for example, in Mexico, the economic the worst problem is going to be with employment, obviously. So there is a lot of money into infrastructure in order, like a Keynesian way, to make a lot of infrastructure, government infrastructure, to start moving the economy because it getting down and down and down in a very high speed.